Looks like players from both teams are coming out from the benches. And Lori, we wondered what we might see tonight. Right now, let's just look in. You can see players from both teams arm in arm, linked. Oh, wow. They're all moving to the center circle together right now.
And now a moment after 6 minutes. This was a similar scene about a half hour ago between Gotham and Washington Spirit.
And if this isn't a shut up and listen to these players moment, I don't really know what is. Devastated, disgusted, but I'm not shocked, and that's the problem.
Teams across the National Women's Soccer League took the field and stood together amid accounts of player abuse that have come to light, forcing a reckoning in this sport. So today, how women's soccer has handled a week of shocking allegations and what their path ahead might hold. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, October 8th. This is ESPN Daily.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Caitlin, there's been so much going on with this story about the National Women's Soccer League and all of the troubling things that have come to light about the treatment of its players and hopefully next a path forward to actually set things right here. But I want to start with you on Wednesday night, because that's when we saw teams return to play after canceling games. So how would you describe the overall tone of those games and those broadcasts on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, it was a somber night, I think, for everyone. And there was this sort of dissonance where you had these really exciting games. I covered the Portland Thorns versus the Houston Dash. It was an exciting back and forth.
Caitlin Murray has covered the National Women's Soccer League since it started in 2012, and she's the author of The National Team, the inside story of the women who changed soccer.
Then you had with New Jersey, New York, Gotham. They were celebrating Carly Lloyd because this is sort of her retirement tour.
Just outside Philadelphia, Carly Lloyd coming back home, playing her first professional match here. We'll have the lineup.
But at the same time, hanging over all of that was this reckoning where players have had a week to sort of process the stories that have come out.
The National Women's Soccer League faces a reckoning over charges that it ignored abuse of its players. This morning, we hear from two women who claim that their former coach, his name is Paul Riley, abused them verbally and sexually. Sinead Farley and Mona Shim say they were filled with fear every single day, and they feel the league did not protect them.
Process the fact that these stories fall in line with experiences and things that have been going on over the course of the existence of the NWSL through its entire history. So players talked about how heavy the past week was and how heavy it was taking the field on Wednesday night. And, you know, one thing that they did was at the sixth minute of every game, both teams went to the center circle. They put their arms around each other, bowed their heads, and sort of just stood there in silence for a minute.
The third game of the night and the third time in the sixth minute, the players come together in midfield.
And it was a really emotional moment. And they chose the sixth minute because it's been 6 years since Mona Shim first reported Paul Riley's behavior to the Portland Thorns front office. And it's taken 6 years for him to be ousted from the league. So it was a very emotional night. The players said they originally wanted to stand there for a full 6 minutes to force everyone to sort of sit with how long 6 minutes is and then compare that to 6 years. but they said it was just too emotional. They didn't think they could handle doing that.
And how would you describe the crowd as all of this was unfolding?
Yeah, there was a lot of, I would say there was anger from the crowd. I mean, in Portland, they had signs that said 6 years. They had signs that said, you're only sorry because you got caught. They had signs very pointed at the Thorns front office calling for Gavin Wilkinson to be fired. There was an element of anger, but there was also an element of supporting the players. In Portland, they were chanting, support the players, support the players. And that was sort of the main theme. But overall, the people who showed up to those games showed up for the players. They didn't show up for the front offices of these teams, that's for sure. They showed up to support the players and show them that they have their backs.
So, Caitlin, I know that those actions, those statements that we just heard, they're in response to a story that The Athletic broke last week. And you mentioned Paul Riley, that's the North Carolina Courage coach who was accused of sexual coercion, of harassment, of abuse and sexual misconduct by former players Sinead Farrelly and Mana Shim, who you alluded to. Paul Riley was fired, his coaching license was suspended, and the abuse, it happened while he was coach of the Portland Thorns, and those two players, Farrelly and Shim, they were on that team. And I know you were watching this game closely, Caitlin, on Wednesday when the Thorns took the field against Houston. What was the post game like? What did players say afterward?
Yeah, it was definitely the most difficult post game press conference I've ever been a part of. There was an air of just sort of exhaustion and heartbreak that you could feel from the coach.
So it's been a very difficult, difficult period, most importantly for women, and especially those that came out, Mana, Sinead, and others that have come forward and showed absolute incredible courage.
And from the one player that they made available.
We've been doing a lot of having big discussions about where this league should go and how it should look like.
And none of the questions were really easy because at the end of the day, the Portland Thorns players have to find a way to move forward with a front office that is at the center of this controversy with Paul Riley. This is the front office that did not act on the complaints that were registered 6 years ago. So the players are the ones who are trying to work through this. And, you know, I asked Megan Klingenberg, the player who was made available, what the conversations have been like with the front office. And she said they're ongoing and the players are trying to figure out how to create accountability. And there's not really, unfortunately, a clear path towards accountability.
And the one thing that keeps coming back to me and to us over and over and over again is that without any say in the league, without any power, and without the financial resources to protect ourselves, then this will continue happening.
The owner of the team, Merritt Paulson, he released an open letter where he said he didn't share the details of what happened with Paul Riley and let Paul Riley's contract expire because he thought it was the right thing to do with player privacy. He was sort of making excuses. And then you have Gavin Wilkinson, the general manager. He's been placed on leave for the Thorns because the players did demand it. They put out a statement before the game demanding that. But he remains in his job with the Portland Timbers, the men's team in the same organization. So accountability hasn't really come yet, but the players, you know, they've emphasized that they are trying to figure out how they can get some accountability.
So in the middle of all of this upheaval, all of these questions that the players have, I do want to know more about the two players who are at the center of the story in Sinead Farrelly and Mana Shim. Caitlin, what can you tell us about who they are?
Yeah, I would say Sinead Farrelly and Mana Shim were two players on the Thorns who, you know, they weren't the star players. They weren't Alex Morgan, who was also on the team. You know, Alex Morgan, you know, she's going to start every game. These were two players who were more on the fringe. And I think that's, you know, as we saw in their stories, that seemed to be why Paul Riley sort of took advantage of that situation, allegedly.
He's a predator. He sexually harassed me. He sexually coerced Sinead, and he took away our careers.
I think it's just really important and why we wanted to share our story and share in so much detail the damage that was done to our careers, but who we are as people.
Mana Shim was a player who she went undrafted and she was not, you know, high on anyone's prospect list, but she tried out and she persevered and she got a spot on the Portland Thorns. Sinead Farley is a player who has been around women's soccer much longer. She played in the previous Women's Soccer League, Women's Professional Soccer. That's the predecessor to that NWSL. So she had been around women's soccer for a long time. So they have very different career trajectories, but they were still sort of fringe players on the Thorns.
So as for the coach, Paul Riley, his career trajectory, how would you describe that, Caitlin? Where did he start in the league? What's his reputation been?
Paul Riley is someone who has also been in women's soccer for a long time. He also coached in the previous league, and that is where the situation with Sinead Farley actually started. It started before they even got to Portland. But Paul Riley is someone who had built a really big reputation as someone who had, he had a coaching school, a soccer school. He had built this sort of soccer empire, and he was a very successful coach in the previous league. He got his start in the NWSL when he joined the Portland Thorns. So it was actually the Portland Thorns that brought him into the NWSL. And, you know, you can't help but think if the Portland Thorns had handled the complaints against him differently, you know, how different things would have gone, because he has, since that complaint was filed in 2015, he eventually went to the Western New York Flash, which turned into the North Carolina Courage. And with those teams, he won several championships and shields, and he was considered one of the best coaches in the league. Many people considered him the best coach in the league. He had a very high reputation. And so that just made it all the more shocking when all of this came out.
Yeah. So when the players made their formal complaints about Riley in 2015, what did the Thorns do as an organization in response? What do we know about that now?
I think that's where we still have a lot of questions. Mana Shim said she filed her complaint. A few days later, she was contacted and she was interviewed. Sinead Farley was interviewed, but it doesn't sound like other players on the team were interviewed. Alex Morgan helped Mana Shim file the complaint. Alex Morgan knew about what was going on and the team did not interview her. Either way, some sort of investigation did happen. Within 1 week of Mana Shim filing that complaint, Paul Riley's contract was allowed to expire, and the Thorns issued a press release thanking him for his service. It didn't seem like there was any other reason than on-field results. The Thorns had missed playoffs, the only time the team has ever missed playoffs. Gavin Wilkinson, the GM of the Thorns, had weeks earlier said they were hinted that they were doing that anyway, so nothing seemed amiss. So Paul Riley was allowed to just walk away without anyone knowing what happened. He told The Athletic when he was originally contacted about these stories, he said that he wasn't reprimanded in any way. So there are a lot of questions about what that investigation was, but either way, at the end of the day, the Thorns quietly let him leave, and then he was quickly hired by the Western New York Flash. And you have to think that the Flash would have reached out to the Thorns to talk about it. The Flash admitted that they knew this investigation happened. So there are a lot of questions about people knowing about this, but not actually doing very much about it.
And the language that the team used at the time, which is an expiring of the contract, you know, there was that press release that was complimentary. Has their language around that event changed since?
Well, Merritt Paulson issued an open letter to fans where he essentially apologized and he said that they handled it the wrong way. But they still maintain that it was a thorough investigation and that they did everything right except for, not making it more publicly known what had actually happened. You know, the North Carolina Courage, their owner put out a statement on Wednesday saying that he was aware of the investigation, but he had been assured that Paul Riley was in good standing. He very conspicuously does not name who assured him that, but there are questions about who decided that what Paul Riley did wasn't bad enough that he shouldn't continue getting jobs in the NWSL.
And so what has Paul Riley said on his own behalf in response to these allegations? And what happens next in terms of like further criminal or civil investigation on that?
When the original report came out, Monisham and Sinead Farley, they chose to tell their stories to The Athletic, who then reached out to Paul Riley and asked him some questions. And he essentially denied the allegations. He said he had never had sex with any of his players. He didn't take his players out drinking. He denied, you know, the biggest parts of the story. We haven't heard anything since the article has come out, but there are now a wave of investigations that are happening into this. The Thorns are revisiting their 2015 investigation. They say that they brought in outside investigators to look into their investigation and to look in the situation again. The NWSL has said they are investigating, and U.S. Soccer has said they are investigating. They're bringing in Sally Yates to investigate not just this, but any other examples of abuse happening in the NWSL. So this has launched, you know, a big response. Even FIFA, the governing body of world soccer, who we would not normally think of the watchdogs of the sport that we want them to be, but they are actually even getting involved too. So hopefully this means that some of the questions that we have that still linger will eventually be answered.
Yeah, the NWSL, Caitlin, it does feel like it is scrambling here. I mean, the commissioner of the league is now the former commissioner of the league, Lisa Baird, who resigned last Friday. What happened with her?
So after Mana Shim and Sinead Farley's stories came out, Lisa Baird issued a statement saying she was shocked by these new allegations and, you know, she was going to get to the bottom of it. But then Alex Morgan on Twitter pulled out the receipts and said, no, actually, Sinead Farley emailed you in April telling you that the 2015 investigation did not look into all the things that Paul Riley had done. It was insufficient and it needs to be reopened. And Lisa Baird did not want to reopen the investigation. She said it had been handled, the matter is settled. She ended her email to Sinead Farley by saying, thank you again for your email, and I wish you the best. It was very dismissive. So once Alex Morgan put those receipts out, there was nowhere to go for Lisa Baird. That was it.
All right, Caitlin, after the break, I need to ask you what all of this reckoning means for the future of the NWSL.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Caitlin, in the past week, we've been hearing that Paul Riley and his behavior, it's not an isolated incident. There is this larger toxic culture throughout the National Women's Soccer League. And those other situations that the league has dealt with in recent years that fit this description, what are those?
Yeah, I mean, just in the last 4 months alone, 4 coaches in the league have been fired for cause, for off-field reasons that were not about results. The most disturbing and messy one was Richie Burke. He was a coach who had been abusive towards youth players previously in his career. He called them homophobic slurs and other sorts of terrible things. And the Washington Spirit was warned that this is the type of coach he is. They still went ahead and hired him. The owner, Steve Baldwin, and the CEO, Larry Best, didn't seem to think that warranted reconsidering their decision. So that behavior, unsurprisingly, continued. Players internally raised concerns. Nothing happened. It was only after the Washington Post started investigating and preparing an expose that the Washington Spirit finally removed him. But even then, they said he had health problems and he was being reassigned to the front office. It was only then the Washington Post story comes out. Then the NWSL got involved because of a new anti-harassment policy, which, by the way, Alex Morgan pushed the league to implement. It was only at that point that then he was actually fired because the league had to act on the anti-harassment policy. So that's one example of the same story, and we've seen it again and again. The OL Reign, their coach, he was fired for misogynistic and body-shaming and abusive comments towards players. Again, there was warning ahead of time. Lindsay Horan, U.S. national team star, she had played for him at PSG many years ago, and she publicly talked about that. But for some reason, the Reign went ahead and hired him anyway. And then when they fired him because he did exactly that, they framed it as a decision based on results. They didn't reveal the real reason he was being fired, which is exactly what we saw with Paul Riley. Again, it was only after an investigation from a journalist that the truth came out. And this has happened sort of again and again and again. I think the Paul Riley accusations are disturbing, but I think it's just as disturbing to see how the cycle just keeps continuing.
It's staggering to hear you outline it like that. I mean, does all of this feel to you, Caitlin, now this is all out there in the open here, the player abuse, the coach's misconduct, does it all feel like it's just been an open secret inside of this league?
Yeah, I think that's sort of the sense that we're getting, which, you know, I've covered this league for a while, and certainly the league has had problems and instances of things, but the pervasiveness and the ubiquitous nature of these allegations has really been a little bit surprising, because now we're having players at this point over the last week coming out and saying, I never felt I had a voice. I never spoke up. And a lot of players were saying that because they were scared about their careers. So I do think it has been an open secret. You know, I think a lot of us were surprised about the Paul Riley allegations because he was so well respected in the league. He had so much success. A lot of, you know, players had spoken very highly of him. But the more we ask questions, the more we find out that, well, people did know there was something going on with him. They knew he was accused of something. And that's the surprising part, that so many people knew. Maybe if they didn't know the full nature of what he has been accused of, they knew something was going on, but they didn't look a little deeper. It didn't make them rethink anything. There has been behavior in this league that has just been normalized and tolerated to the point where I think discerning right and wrong has become difficult. And for players who don't make very much money and they want to have spots on the team, they're fighting, you know, to play for the national team and things like that, it's a culture of silence where they don't feel like they can speak up. So hopefully that's changing, but certainly we're finding out just how widespread this was.
Yeah, the power dynamic on these teams, Caitlin, we heard from Thorns defender Megan Klingenberg, who said in a press conference that a lack of power and agency is going to lead to more abuse happening. What if players had in terms of recourse to handle their concerns as they learn about this stuff that's happening behind closed doors?
So they have that anti-harassment policy now, but that isn't enough. And the players are asking for more. I think one of the big things they've asked for is that the league adopt a step back protocol, which means as soon as someone is accused of wrongdoing, they have to step back, but also the people that hired them should have to step back from their roles, because it's people hiring people despite red flags, protecting people despite red flags. Mm-hmm. So the players are demanding that. The players are demanding more of input and insight and involvement with front offices and being part of the decisions that the league is making. I think in the past, the players haven't really been consulted that much. They want to have a say in who the next commissioner is going to be. They have started a union that has only recently started to work on negotiating a new CBA. So I think this is going to add a lot to those discussions. And it really is important that the players do have a CBA, that they do have a voice, and, you know, workers' rights are being protected in this case, because they certainly haven't been in the past. I think the bottom line is that there was not a recourse for the players before, and now everyone is sort of navigating how they can create that infrastructure.
Yeah, it occurs to me also that, you know, women's soccer, from the outside, we know the big names, right? We know Alex Morgan, who you've talked about. We know Mia Hamm, her fellow 99ers, Abby Wambach, Megan Rapinoe, our own Julie Foudy. We know these characters. I mean, you wrote the book, literally, Caitlin, on the U.S. women's national team and all its success. What have we heard from the sports stars on the subject?
Well, I think the overarching reaction, of course, has been outrage and hurt on behalf of the players who are in the league. Megan Rapinoe still, you know, she plays in the league, and her response has been burn it all down. And she wants to see a clearing of house. She has said she's tired of seeing men protecting men in this league. And for some of the former players, I think there's a recognition that this isn't new, but it's still disheartening to see that it's still going on. It was interesting to see Abby Wambach calling out, you know, the Thorns, because they knew what was going on. But a lot of people were quick to remind Abby Wambach of Magic Jack, a team that she played for, where the owner had been accused of berating players, sexual harassment, asking the players to call him daddy, a lot of really disturbing things. And ESPN actually did a deep investigation into this. But that was something that players at the time didn't really talk about. It was something that players like Abby Wambach had witnessed. So that sort of goes to show how long this has been going on. You know, after the mess with Magic Jack, which essentially sort of helped kill WPS, the predecessor to the NWSL. After all of that, you would think that better infrastructure would have been created the next time around. But Magic Jack and what happened with WPS has really showed how little has been learned from some of these things, and how some of these behaviors just keep continuing.
Yeah, it's remarkable, Caitlin, that the other part of the story that we've heard from the two women who came forward, they say that a big part of the reason why Riley got away with this was also because there was this shared interest in protecting the nascent NWSL. There was this organization-wide fear that you don't want to torpedo the best thing that women's soccer has going as professional leagues in the U.S. are concerned. Can you describe that fraught dynamic, how an instinct to support and protect your sport could lead to a destruction of it?
Yeah, I think there is a delicate balance when you have a league that is still fledgling. The more players complain about certain things, the more that the league is maybe forced into addressing things and putting resources behind things when the league doesn't really have those at that point. I mean, a lot of these teams haven't even had HR departments, and it's certainly not a good excuse, but I think that there is an idea that the league can't afford to address everything at once. You know, there's too much going on. The league needs to focus on growing and building. And I mean, that's the thing we saw with Lisa Bard, is she was lauded for the work she did bringing in sponsorships and commercial partners in building that part of the league. And that was seen as a really important part of the league. But if you can't even protect players, then it sort of seems like, what's the point of all that other stuff? But it is a difficult dynamic where these players are, you know, making no money and just trying to build a career. If they are difficult, there's going to be other players who are willing to take their spots as well. So I think all around, between protecting the league and just self-preservation for the players, there's certainly been a culture of silence and feeling like players cannot speak up.
So that culture of silence, Caitlin, does that feel like it's over now? Does it feel like that at least is in the rearview mirror as we begin to hear from players speaking up in ways that are, again, shocking and also necessary?
Well, the players have made it clear that they're not going to allow that to continue. I think anyone who has been around this sport and covered it long enough will have a little bit of fear that this is, you know, a moment where there's a reckoning and then maybe things go back to the way they were. If you're just relying on people to do the right thing, clearly the past 9 years of the NWSL has shown that's not enough. There needs to be rigid and enforced protocols and policies. But it's still sort of wait and see. I think there's a lot of optimism and hope, but we have been here before, so it's really about getting it done.
Caitlin Murray, thank you for discussing this with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Antel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Julia Faust, Andre Soto, Christian Gardner, Garrett Lang, Max Brodsky, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll talk to you Monday.